You're listening to the Styling Advisory Podcast, the only show exploring the business of personal styling and how stylists are helping retailers to personalize customer experiences. We're interested in how styling leaders have built a successful business and what retailers are doing to capitalize on the styling client community. If you're a personal stylist currently avoiding doing the marketing activity on your to-do list today, schedule your tea and chat with founder and host Sarah Cohen via the website. Alrighty, welcome everyone to another episode of the Styling Advisory Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Cohen, and today we're joined by Katrina Vandeven, co-founder and CEO of Lookbook, a one-stop shopping and styling destination for size 14 plus, and they're on a mission to redefine what it means to be fashionable. Katrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
My absolute pleasure. I'm really excited to hear a lot more about this online destination. So to begin with and to introduce the listeners to this new endeavor, why don't you start by sharing why you started Lookbook and I guess the catalyst for launching into the world of e-com?
Absolutely. So I guess the first thing to say, Sarah, is I do not come from a fashion background. Fun fact about me, I did actually train as a personal stylist back in my late teens and worked in that high-end fashion space to put myself through my undergraduate degree. But then went off, did a bunch of other things, ended up working in nuclear diplomacy. So if we want to talk about a 180 in terms of career, yeah.
Sorry. Nuclear diplomacy to yes. CEO of an e-com brand sort of defying retail barriers.
Yeah, I like to keep things interesting. In between those two things, I should mention I did an MBA at the University of Sydney. I knew that I wanted to get out of government, and I really used the MBA to sort of learn the language of business and to feel like I had the skills to make that leap over to entrepreneurship in the fashion e-com space.
Oh my God, I'm so inspired and intimidated by you in equal measure right now.
Well, thank you. I think that's a compliment. Thank you.
It is. Babe, that's amazing. Okay, carry on.
Yeah, so look, the genesis moment for me, so I give you that backstory because I've always loved fashion. And while I didn't go on to work in that as my substantive career, I always talk about, you know how we say Netflix and chill? I'm like Netflix and scroll. Like I'm always like adding to the wish list on the Iconic. I'm always, you know, it's the thrill of the chase for me and putting together what I think is my ideal wardrobe. Awesome. But you get it, Sarah?
Can I just pause for a moment? I literally have in between notes for work, I will have just lists of capsule outfit ideas. Gold V-neck knit, cute woolen thick knits like Kenzo, satin skirts. Like I am obsessed with building and seeking the perfect capsule wardrobe. Anyway, amen. Carry on, amen. My friend.
Amen. I'm there with you. But I think for me, the genesis moment with Lookbook really came when I was scrolling through Instagram one day. This was probably early 2021. And I had this aha moment that I was following hundreds of fashion accounts. And it was the first time I'd really taken a step back and gone, you know what, this is fun for me, but if I didn't enjoy shopping as a size 18 woman, how would I feel about this? Because it is really time consuming. I mean, if you enjoy fashion, it can always be time consuming. It's a hobby. But when you consider the fact that, you know, most stores in a shopping center don't cater to me, even though, you know, we talk about the average Australian woman being about a size 16. So I'm just above average.
Yeah.
And, you know, most Westfields, I might have one or two stores that I can shop in. Mm. So that really started the journey of Lookbook and interrogating this question of, is this a problem? Are other people seeing it as a problem? Because I was always really conscious to not build a business and a brand around me because N equals one. And, you know, that's not a good enough reason to start a company. And look, what we found, so here's what you need to know about the plus market in Australia. So it is 66% of women, firstly. So we're not talking, if one more potential investor tells me it's a cute little niche, I'm going to scream.
Yeah. Because it's not a niche. It's the majority.
It's the mainstream. So we're talking about $6 billion a year is what the plus market is worth in Australia. Globally, it's worth closer to $300 billion. But within that, in Australia, so 25% of the market is the big brands, you know, like your City Chic, Taking Shape, Autograph. So together they account for about 25% of the market. And then the remaining 75% is all of the small and micro brands. So our CRM tells us that there are at least 400, and man, I'm still finding new brands like every couple of days. So it was really interesting to me when I started interviewing women in the 14 plus space, and they were saying, no one's designing for me. Just to think, well, the disconnect is actually that you don't know who's designing for you, because most of these brands are small and micro brands. If you do a Google search for plus size fashion, they're never going to come up because they don't have the marketing budget to come up. So that's why it's this disconnect between supply and demand. So
absolutely. And that Natalie Wakeling was saying exactly the same thing from a PR perspective. If let's say from, you know, the major publications and the platforms that generate the most awareness of brands, so, you know, magazines, for example, if those fashion editors aren't pulling in the stock, then no one is then presented with these new brands. And as a small up and coming or emerging brand, if you don't have the budget for marketing or SEO, there is absolutely no footprint for anyone to discover you, and you're just doing organic content. So that's such an interesting kind of handbrake that you've come across.
Yeah, absolutely. Love Nat. So actually Embodied Women is one of our partner brands with Lookbook. So it's been great to work alongside her for the last couple of years. But you're absolutely right, Sarah. It is a handbrake. And what's really, you know, frustrating about it is the smaller brands are doing, in my humble opinion, a lot of the best design work. Because what happens is often you have and that's a great example of this, coming out of being a plus size model herself and saw a gap in the industry, starting with denim, said we need to do better in terms of the denim that's available for plus size bodies, and then really interrogated what that meant practically in terms of the design elements of that piece. And our website and our CRM is filled with brands like that, where a woman might be a size 22 and said, I can't find work pants. Guess what? I'm going to design the perfect pair of plus size work pants, or sleepwear, or activewear, et cetera, et cetera. So that was really the genesis, that, you know, we wanted to connect women with designers. We wanted to make plus size shopping as seamless as it should be. And I know this is going to sound strange when I say it. It shouldn't sound strange, but we wanted to create a shopping experience that straight size customers wish they had. And if you think that sounds strange, just think about flipping it, right? Because plus size customers are always envious of the straight size shopping experience, just in terms of availability and ease and all of those things. And we just want to flip the script.
Oh God, that is so smart. I love it. I love it. Because again, I guess there's a couple of different variables at play here. Number one, being able to find and present a multitude of plus size brands that are genuinely designing with the curvy body in mind, rather than we're designing a size 6 sample and then we'll just grade up. But then also being able to transform or revolutionize the transactional experience, the customer experience online for the curvy model. I know that you you do all of your in-house shoots, don't you? Because I think in last conversation I had on the show was talking about this as well, the idea that we want to make sure that the content, it resonates with the consumer as well. It's not just, oh yeah, no, we found something in your size. Here's the campaign shot of size 6 model. So tell me about that.
Absolutely. So look, we don't do e-com shots, just because we have 25 partner brands, we have nearly 1,000 products on our site. Man, that would be an absolute headache. So we do really work with our brands and ask them wherever possible to ensure that they're shooting on plus size models. And that's actually something that we offer on a paid basis. So while we don't do all of it, if a brand says, look, we just are struggling to be able to source a plus model, we can absolutely take care of their e-com shots for them. But where we sit is more so in the editorial space, because what we recognize, and you alluded to it before, Sarah, is there's a lack of representation in that high-end fashion magazine space. So of course, if you're on a plus size website, they'll have an e-com shot of a plus size model. but it's not aspirational. It's not telling me, you know, it's always that feeling that you get when you're reading a fashion magazine. It's that I want to buy into that. That's the lifestyle. That's the aesthetic. Mm. That's, it makes you feel a certain way. And we want to create that for the plus market, because it's really quite shitty, to be honest, when you go, wow, that's the look and feel and the aesthetic that I want. Oh, wait, I can't access it. It doesn't come in my size. So that was really why we decided to go down this avenue of doing editorial shoots. And one of the more interesting takeaways that we found is when we did our first shoot, we used what I would probably term some more conventional shaped and size plus size models. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because their imagery didn't resonate as much with our market. When we started actually going out and scouting our own talent, which we've been doing now for about 18 months, mm-hmm. we started scouting because, fun fact, most agencies, even if they're plus size agencies, traditionally and typically, it's changing at the margins, won't sign a model above a size 18. So when we started a 14 and we have brands going up to a size 38, all of a sudden having a model who's a size 18 isn't all that representative, particularly if they have the conventional hourglass shape, they're 6'1". I mean, they're absolutely stunning women, but
they're in proportion, which is outside of the norm. Most of us are not in proportion, regardless of our size. It's the
100%. So what we found was we started scouting just everyday women, the women that, you know, we are friends with and work with, and, you know,
who are glam.
Absolutely glamorous. They're stunning. But they have, as you say, not the perfect model proportions, because let's be real, like 99% of the population don't have those so-called model proportions. We're always conscious of trying to shoot larger women as well. So I guess that's a call out. While you predominantly cater to the stylist market, if there are any women listening who are, you know, larger than a size 18, we would love to talk to you. We would love to explore having you model for us, because that's what resonates with our customers and that's what we're passionate about. And not just size representation, but age, cultural diversity, all of the intersectionalities. We want to represent real plus size women.
So I've got a question for you, which is a slightly off topic. I work with an incredible soul, Claire, and she has been on a journey over the last 20 years with body dysmorphia and a kind of the cycle of trying to create the perfect body, and has sort of come to this beautiful place through quite an awakened journey and studying of accepting her body and loving her body for all its imperfections, and works with others to encourage that sort of confidence. When it comes to finding women who are confident enough in their body to model, regardless of size, but I think particularly like from a size 14 plus, do you find that women generally are like jumping at the chance, or does it take a little bit of convincing still to remind them that, do you know what, we are all beautiful. We should all have the opportunity to model or to glam up or to celebrate our bodies. I just think this particular emotional handbrake is a little bit challenging.
100%. So there are a couple of layers in response to that, Sarah. So normally when we scout, we scout in person, and, you know, you get a pretty good read on someone's energy, their confidence, all of those things. So we have a pretty good strike rate. It sounds really awkward, and it is really awkward. It's not my comfortable space. Going up to people on the street and saying, "Hey, I think that you're absolutely stunning. You know, here's a business card. Let's have a chat." But those people typically are confident because we've seen them in real life. We've seen how they dress. We've seen how they
move.
Absolutely. And then when we've got onto photo shoots, because we've done swimwear shoots, we did a shapewear shoot, which was essentially underwear.
Yeah.
But when we went into that shoot, I was really conscious, and I said to everyone, like, there is no expectation for you to do underwear. Have a think about it. Let me know. And it's not just a confidence thing. I mean, our models all have day jobs as well. I'm also conscious, like, not everyone wants to, you know, be in their smalls on the internet. There's that as well, right? Realistically. Yeah. But I said, go away, have a think, let me know on the day. No pressure. On the day, no joke, every single one of them said, "I want to do it."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And we had
from 25 to 55. We had bodies from like a 14 to a 22. And we just had like Lizzo pumping. And I had this like little tear moment because I was like, this is exactly what we're here for. We want to empower women, and you know, it's on their terms, it's in their court, but like to be creating the environment where they feel comfortable stepping outside of their comfort zone. And we also did a swimwear shoot down at I'm in Sydney, down at Clovelly Beach, and it was packed. It was like November, and we took this bunch of plus size babes to the beach, which, you know, I have to admit, and I give everyone kudos, I actually did a bit of swimwear myself that day. I don't often model, but I, you know, threw my hat in the ring for that one. And it, again, it was just, and there was nothing but support from everyone on the beach. It was just great. So, you know, just those examples where you go, you know, hopefully we also did a service to other plus size women who were there going, yeah, oh my gosh, I never, you know, I might never have seen myself in that light before. And now I've seen these babes just out here with a photographer, like living, yes, their best lives in swimwear.
But you know, the I want to be clear, this is I'm amazed and excited, not because of the size of the women modeling, but because I think I'm not too sure how old you are, but and we don't need to reveal it, but growing up, my generation, you know, which was pre-social media and very, we had the sort of the very skinny, perfect, you know, the Kate Moss models. And we just lived in an environment in which we didn't focus on building up our confidence and accepting our bodies, no matter what size, shape, color, what all the different body parts look like. So there was a lot of shame and not enough conversation around embracing and accepting ourselves. Consequently, I would imagine that women of a similar generation to me feel self-conscious, it would feel self-conscious at any age, because we've just not been in that. We've just not had the language, or the zeitgeist hasn't been around celebration. You know, we didn't have icons like Lizzo, just and other vocal women talking about just owning what you have and embracing it. So for us to also, I guess, see these long-term changes in the fashion industry holistically, we also need to ensure that businesses like you are creating these environments where it's like, yeah, no, look, we are in the business of, you know, selling clothing that's available from size 14 plus. The confidence should be coming from you guys as women, not necessarily because of your size, but just being able to embrace who you are, as you said, and having an environment to shop and be excited and not be relegated to the back of the store with some horrendous, you know, one size available piece of crap.
Absolutely. And just on that note, I think you're absolutely right, Sarah. Things are getting a lot better. A flat rule that we do have is that we don't do any airbrushing, any retouching, because it's not, as you say, it's not just about body shape and size, but it's, you know, stretch marks, it's skin texture, it's all of those things that over the years we've been told are wrong. Yeah. We're like, no, that's a load of crap. We're not buying into this. We're not retouching what are perfectly normal things,
healthy,
to see adult women. Yeah. So let's just move on.
Have you got any models or any women that are mums?
So this is actually something I struggled with a little bit, to be honest. So you know how I said that we do really well when we go directly to people? So I've got a bunch of mum friends, not many who are plus size, or at least not many who are plus size and live in the same city as me. So we did a social media call out because we actually do some really cute matching mummy and me pieces on our site, which is really hard to find in plus size, which is why we really wanted to make sure that we had that offering. So we did a social media call out and we got some interest, but nowhere near what I was probably expecting. And I think that's absolutely that confidence piece that you mentioned, you know, when it's a cold call and you're saying, we want to give you this opportunity, people, I think too often, and women are particularly guilty of this, tend to self-select out and go, absolutely, oh, I don't want someone like me. Well, no, that's a load of crap. I'm sorry. We absolutely do. So I think though, that was really telling that there still is a long way to go in terms of plus women wanting to just put their hand up in a cold call, whether they're mothers or not. But that was just the example I had in recent months.
Yeah. And it just goes, it comes back to how we perceive ourselves and our body, even if someone's saying, no, 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 we want your body, it shows that the problem is actually, it's within ourselves, how we see ourselves. So even, I think, as you said, we still have a long way to go in accepting or perhaps viewing our bodies as different. I often try and say to myself, I call my stomach like the baby motel because I had two babies live, you know, inside me. And consequently, like you can't expect to have a body that's completely
unchanged.
Unchanged after your body has created and grown life twice. So this show isn't about me and my bodily issues. So we'll move on. I wanted to talk to you about something controversial and something really interesting. So when we were prepping for the podcast for everyone listening, we wanted to talk about the key messages of things like minimizing, concealing, camouflaging, the kind of, I guess, negative connotations associated with these words, and then the trigger word of flattering. Over to you, Katrina.
Gosh, they're such loaded terms. And what's interesting is there's no consensus. So, you know, lots of plus size brands will use the term flattering. And no shade to them. It's up to everyone to do what they want to do in their own marketing. But for me, what all of these words come down to is it's about hiding. And I know people don't necessarily think of that when they hear the word flattering at first, but think about when someone says to you, oh, that outfit's really, Sarah, that dress is really flattering on you. And how does that make you feel? I mean, the direct connotation is, I'm going to ask you, Sarah, I'm not going to tell you. What comes into your mind when someone says, oh, that's really flattering on you?
I am a Leo. That's my star sign. So I immediately accept all compliments and wish to hear more. What it indirectly implies is you look shit before, but now that you've got this garment on, you look better than you did before. So it's an inherent otherness. You're better now than you were before. And if you took 100%. That thing off, you'd look shit again.
100%. And I mean, as someone in a plus size body, I think it's the inherent subtext is it makes you look smaller.
Yeah.
When smaller, something is flattering,
younger. Yeah. Yeah. And it's either to our age or to our size, right? As women, like, oh, you look so good today is like, oh, because I've just had my Botox, or, you know, like you're looking younger, or you that makes you look really skinny. You look hot.
Yeah. So I think we can agree. It's sort of one of those, you know, thinly veiled insults in the guise of a compliment. And you know what? It's lazy. I'm just going to put it out there. It is lazy. If you're giving someone a compliment, hey, Sarah, that blue is an absolutely stunning color on you. I mean, I can only see sort of from your shoulders up. That's what I'm looking at. But it is. It's absolutely beautiful on you. You know, I can tell you how happy you look. I can tell you how confident you are. I can tell you a million different really nice compliments that anyone would want to hear, which are not that thing that you're wearing makes you look a little bit better than I probably thought that you normally looked. That's not a compliment. So please, no, you're everyone, right. Stop using flattery.
You're right. And I think it, the other connotation, which all of this is subjective, you know, we all have the opportunity to embrace the English language or whatever, you know, any language, and then assume meaning to the words. But I do think that I absolutely appreciate the concept that when someone says that's very flattering, what they're saying is it's effectively hiding your flaws right now.
Yeah,
and absolutely. That direction, like that shouldn't be the objective of fashion, to hide my flaws.
No. And I think, you know, even if you're someone who doesn't personally have an issue with the word, and again, if we look at the dictionary definition, there's nothing particularly nefarious in there, but it's how we're socialized, how we've come to read that and the social cues around it. I just encourage, even if you don't have an issue with it, to think about the purpose of giving a compliment. And the purpose of giving a compliment is to lift someone else up. So if you know that that term is likely to cause offense or to make someone feel crappy, irrespective of your personal views on it, well, you probably don't want to put that on someone else that you care about, do you? Because at the end of the day, it's not about you as the compliment giver. It's about the intent you're trying to put
deliver.
Forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think it's like the modern version of, oh, look at you and your lovely childbearing hips? So tell me, what's the feedback been from the customers, from your social media community? What's everyone been saying?
Just in general about Lookbook?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look, I think it's been overwhelmingly supportive. I think, you know, we are dealing with a market that, as I said earlier, despite being the majority, is too often relegated to that sad back rack in the fashion store. We actually popped up a bit of a question box on our Instagram last night asking people, like, what's the worst thing a sales assistant's ever said to you? And oh man, it's depressing.
Give us a few.
Oh gosh. Without people even asking for help, so them just walking into a store, the sales assistant looking them up and down and going, we don't have anything for you here. Like, why are you here?
Sorry, is this Pretty Woman? That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Unsolicited, you know, you'd be so, that dress would look so much better on you if you lost a bit of weight. Oh gosh, what were the other ones? You know, and things that aren't directly someone trying to be mean, but when stores say, oh, well, you can get the plus sizes online, which is something that we perpetually see with you know, high street brands starting to edge into the plus size space, their reticence to actually stock the bigger sizes in store.
How does that make sense? Because you have, like, most retailers will have like a model stock order, you know, like if the stock is on the floor, then, and we know that 66% of Australian women are of, you know, size 14 plus, then it stands to reason that they would be selling that stock quite easily and quite quickly and therefore ordering more and expanding the, you know, the stock. So I don't understand why, what's happening.
Okay, so I'll give you an example. I obviously won't name the brand because, you know, I don't want them coming for me. But there's a major retailer who's just expanded from going up to a 16 to going up to a 20. I was really excited when I heard that and I went into one of their boutiques and I said, you know, awesome work. Where are your 18s and 20s? Because they tend to be on the smaller size. So I went, okay, I'll try both sizes on. And they said, no, we're only trialing that in 6 stores across Australia. So you've gone to all of the time and energy and money of producing these two sizes. Let's put this in perspective. It's not taking up a massive amount of room on your rack.
Yeah.
You've gone to all the effort of advertising and getting women excited that this is happening. And then I've walked into your store and you've gone, yeah, but I don't want to see you in my store. It's, you know, it's such a mixed message. So it's like the brands are being too tentative. Then the customers go, well, you actually aren't serious about wanting me as a customer. Mm. You're making this really tokenistic effort that you want my money, but you don't even want me in your stores, because that's something that happens quite often where they'll either do a limited drop in store and it will be such a failure that they'll pull it and they'll go back to having plus sizes online only, or they'll never even try putting it in store. It's online only. It's poorly publicized. Often they haven't done their work around the grading. So they've done a straight scale, which, you know,
which is stupid
about why even at a size 14, that doesn't work.
Absolutely. You have to design for the form in mind, you know, and a sample size is a coat hanger.
Yeah.
We'll quell the rage and we'll talk about that topic another time. But wouldn't you say then that, there is such a massive possibility and opportunity for retailers to revolutionize the in-store experience for the vast majority of Australian consumers.
100%. 100%.
It's not nuclear diplomacy, guys. It's not that hard.
It's not that hard. Just, you know, and I think...
just stock the fucking sizes.
Yes. And you know, I think... actually give people choice. And I think this is something that's been really problematic in plus size fashion for a long time, is there's a plus size look and we all know what it is, right?
Yes.
It's a bit frumpy. It's a bit oversized, got a cold shoulder. Yep. It's got too many florals. We all know what we're talking about. Yeah. All those really sort of slightly naff, like live, laugh, love, you know, the printed tees.
Totally. Totally. You know,
and so if you're someone who is plus size and you actually are fashion forward, stylish. I mean, one of my friends loves that really like the Gucci androgynous aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of 16, 18, 6 foot tall. So again, like model-esque proportions, but trying to find anything in those sizes, because what a lot of brands do is they'll select for us. It's like, oh no, so anyone above a 16 won't want the crop top. They won't want the this. They won't want the straight legged pant. We'll give them this curated, watered down version of our offering. So I think that's a really big takeaway as well for brands, is to stop putting us in a separate category. Actually just make a collection that includes all sizes and be done with it.
So what if we were to, because in my head I'm like, okay, what's the problem here? Maybe they need to see the data that they will actually in fact sell the clothing, obviously, you know, like you don't want to spend. So from your CRM, what are some of the items that are selling the best at the moment in terms, you know, like let's say activewear or special occasion wear? What are your top sellers?
So actually you've hit the nail on the head. So they are the things that just run out the door. Because everyone has special events to go to, and we do have a really comprehensive selection of just really shit hot evening wear that, you know, jumpsuits that aren't too short in the body and don't cling to your thighs, and you can actually get them off to go to the toilet. That's really nice, right? It's not like...
Well, it is. What a luxury.
What a luxury. So Embody do incredible jumpsuits. Yes. Have another brand called Novella from Melbourne, who do just the most gorgeous curve hugging dresses. And that's what our customers resonate with time and time again, is having the option to flaunt what they've got. And I know this sounds so insignificant to anyone who hasn't been part of this plus size market, but if I see one more freaking Empire line after 5 weeks. No disrespect to anyone who wants to wear an Empire line, but not everyone does. Not everyone does.
Sometimes it's a little pride and prejudice-y also. Like it's not even a modern style.
Yeah. And that's what it comes back down to, choice. And so I think when brands are willing to push the boat out, do something really interesting and something that genuinely works for the curve market, because this is a big part of it as well. As I said, you can't do a straight scale. You actually have to think about what's going to fit and the ways in which you have to adjust a pattern to make it work.
Do you think then to counter that point, then obviously that means that the overheads increase. So the operating costs to be able to have almost like, would the plus size customer, again, we're just using this term, the terminology from an industry perspective, would the plus size customer be happy to absorb that cost?
Oh no, don't do that.
if we're wondering why there is this dissonance, and there to cater to the requirements, as we said, to be able to go, okay, well, we need to potentially in 2 to 3 size increments, we have to adjust the pattern slightly. That means that it will cost more. And these businesses are fashion business. Like Natalie needs to earn her.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, I have many thoughts on this. I think my first thought is, so why, knowing what we know about the size and shape of women, why are we starting with the assumption that we start at a size 6? Why is the 6 to 14 quote unquote normal, and everything
drop
is the problem quote unquote that needs to cost the customer more? Well, no, let's throw that out the window. Let's start with the fact that the average Australian woman's a size 16. Let's base our collections out from that point. And you're going to have an equal number of sizes smaller and an equal number of sizes roughly bigger. And you charge the same for all of them. It's like buying a pair of shoes. I have size 11 feet. My size 11 shoes don't cost more than a size 5 shoe. If you're a tall in jeans, you don't pay more for the extra length. You know, I think that that's really lazy on the part of brands. If they're quibbling over that.
Yes, no. I was just imagining that it would then be absorbed across the board. You know, it wouldn't necessarily, you wouldn't be charging That is such a good point, where we start the sample, where the pattern is designed. That's, oh God, that's so smart.
Yeah.
I'm mindful of time, my love. So I just want to talk about one final thing
Of course.
That lookbook is not only shopping, it's also styling. So can you talk me through the styling services that are on offer and how our listeners as personal stylists and image consultants could potentially collaborate or join?
Absolutely. So this is something that we really took away when we started Lookbook, is that we have this massive variation in terms of women's confidence, as we've been talking about a lot. People like me, I don't need a stylist. I'm pretty happy doing my own thing. But a lot of people love having a little bit of guidance. And we know, as we've discussed, the in-store shopping experience is very much a mixed bag. There's a lot of negatives there. So we've curated this collection of stylists who have experience working with the plus market and exactly how to style for that market, how to help people through if it might have been sort of a body change, if they have, for instance, just had a child, they might have gone through menopause. You know, our bodies change constantly. And people book that as a one-to-one session via our website. We've been conscious to offer that as a virtual service, firstly, because we started during, COVID. So there was a bit of necessity there. But we also know that we get a lot of customers from rural and regional areas, and we wanted to make sure that they could access awesome stylists in Melbourne. They didn't have to book a plane ticket and go to the city to shop. There's someone who can help them shop from the comfort of their living room.
So amazing. And you found these stylists from the ASI?
So that's where we started. Absolutely. And look, they're all incredible. We're always on the lookout for more stylists to partner with. And we're always looking for stylists who are interested in being part of our editorial shoots, because we obviously need creative direction on those as well. So that's probably the pitch in terms of the way stylists can get involved, and always happy and excited to talk to anyone who might be interested in partnering with us.
Excellent. And so to remind the stylists that are listening, partnering with retailers like Katrina and Lookbook is another way of obviously broadening the reach that they have to, you know, get in front of new customers, new clients. So I think that particularly if you're starting out and you don't have a large client base or an email, a subscriber base, donating your time, offering as much as you possibly can to support and to support businesses like Lookbook, the win is twofold, you know. So I would encourage anyone that's interested to email us, and we can put you in touch with Katrina. And I think, I mean, I've got so many more questions, but we've chatted for a while, and I think we could talk all day. But darling, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being brave enough to launch something disruptive, exciting, and very much needed in the industry.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. Pleasure.
You've been listening to the Styling Advisory Podcast with Sarah Cohen. If you're enjoying the vibe, you can join our community of styling experts at The Styling Advisory on Instagram and Facebook. And you can watch these interviews on our YouTube channel, Styling Advisory TV. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our show so Sarah can spend more time on the mic.